Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to a new episode of Esports Boom, your weekly esports business podcast. My name is Maurice Eisenman, and I'm as always joined by my co-host Anton Ferraro. Anton, how are you today?
I am doing my best not to die in this winter bomb that's approaching us tonight. As our loyal listeners know, we record on Wednesday, and New York right now is about to get hit by some freak snowstorm. Out in the Rockaways, the ocean's freezing, people are scared, there's, you know, looting, there's street fires. It's incredible right now.
But yeah, it's going to be real life PUBG.
Real life PUBG in New York. Got in all that practice, going to get our chicken dinners in. All right, so let's jump into the first story. Basically, earlier last week, Blizzard quietly made some changes to Overwatch tournament requirements. So as many people are familiar, later this week, the Overwatch League will start. And similar to last year, third-party tournaments have a bunch of different rules that they have to follow. Blizzard basically is trying to avoid having a strong competitor to the Overwatch League, and they're trying to focus on promoting their product. So the details that emerged this week was that let's read the full guidelines. It must be a standalone event. With a prize pool and appearance fees of under $10,000. The total prize pool for an organizer's Overwatch events must be less than $50,000 for the year. So you can't just, make 10 of these in a year and create a business. The tournament name must have community in it. And contributions from sponsors must be less than $1,000 per sponsor per event. The other stipulations are there's a bunch of sponsors that cannot be attached to your tournaments. These are athletic wear and apparel, energy drinks and soft drinks, payment services and computer monitors, CPUs and graphics cards. And Overwatch community tournament organizers must make sure that there is no overlap in broadcasts with the official Blizzard-owned Overwatch tournaments. So Maurice, I know you had some thoughts about this.
Yeah, so first of all, I think this is kind of done in a way to completely, strangle any kind of profitable, DreamHack or ESL or like a bigger third-party tournament organizer, any of their chances of making a healthy kind of esports tournament, Overwatch tournament. But I think that's not necessarily the most interesting thing about this. I think there are two things that are really interesting. First of all, the fact that it is clear with this that the OWL is going to be the main focus of everything Overwatch, and that Blizzard wants it so that everything Overwatch related, Overwatch esports related, will be the OWL and the Contender Series, perhaps in a smaller capacity. But I think more importantly, and this is kind of a theory, there's no hard proof for this, are the things about sponsorship. So these are things like, we saw the community competition cannot be sponsored by any companies that sell or promote athletic wear, apparel, energy drinks, soft drinks, payment services, computer monitor, CPUs, and graphics cards. I think a reason for this might be, and I have no proof for this, but I think it's pretty logical.
Are you putting on your Alex Jones hat?
A little bit, yeah. My tinfoil hat. I think the reason for this is going to be that these categories are the OWL exclusive categories.
So I'm going to add on your theory, and I think that the situation is that Blizzard is probably courting some of these sponsors, and they don't want to give them the opportunity to test with a smaller market. I think that one, they want to protect whatever sponsors they have secured. So to your theory, and two, it's kind of a move of removing options from sponsors. So it's not necessarily, that they don't want these community tournaments to have sponsors. It's that any sponsorship that goes into OWL must be of a certain threshold, and it must go to the Overwatch League.
Yeah, I agree. But furthermore, I think these are going to be, you have categories that are exclusive to the league. And you have categories that teams can have. So I think these categories, teams in the OWL, so I think these categories might be league exclusive, so that you'll get, the official energy drink of Overwatch or the official energy drink of the OWL. So, and they don't want, you know, Pepsi to sponsor the OWL and the or Overwatch as a whole, and then Coke sponsoring all these community events.
So what do you think of the move? Do you think it's a good move? Do you think there's some like potential ramifications to it for the Overwatch League that they're, you know, either choosing to bear or that they're not seeing? Do you have any insight?
Insights? Well, so I think this is a good thing. From a perspective, you know, from a business perspective, if what we care about is the franchise model, I think it's good that you have these exclusive sponsorship. It's bad just from a kind of a community perspective of having, you know, the Overwatch, the local Overwatch community being so strangled, because it's very difficult, very, very difficult to create a profitable, small-sized community event with all these limits.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think I don't necessarily know if it's the best thing for the players. One of the parts that kind of scares me is that even like, okay, like let's look at LCS as our success story. You know, even they allow large community tournaments with prize pools over $10,000. There's, you know, like in certain regions, they've allowed third-party organizers to exist. And I think it's kind of created this like feeder situation where, you know, there's even for League right now, there's still a handful of grassroots tournaments around. And when League tried to, you know, operate their Challenger series, they found that, you know, owning that much of the ecosystem, owning the feeder system wasn't to their benefit or to the benefit of the players and to the benefit of the League. And I'm worried that such strict guidelines either force Blizzard or Activision to operate that feeder league, and that it will stifle the like organic grassroots growth.
Yeah, just to give an example, if you're a, you know, a 18-year-old guy, you love Overwatch, and you're, you know, you're getting relatively high ranked every season, what you want to have is you want to have these local or at least community tournaments where you can get some prize money, obviously nothing to get to become professional, but to the point where it is easier for you to decide, I'm going to be an Overwatch streamer, I'm going to go to these community events, and I will become a face of Overwatch that isn't part of the OWL, and hopefully I will be good enough so that next year, you know, the second year of the OWL, a team will get me. So it's the same way as we see, you know, take any other esports. You have tons of these community teams getting together that are just, you know, really passionate about what they're doing. They make some money to justify the large investment of going to all these events. And eventually, you know, a big team will get some of these players. This is completely, this is probably not going to happen with Overwatch now. And I think that's bad because in order for Overwatch to have a success, which is what they want, it needs to get to the point where it's like basketball, where you have all these, you know, local leagues and local events where everyone, where the casual and semi-competitive user base and community is so big, which eventually these type of people will be the most hardcore followers of Overwatch, and that's kind of being taken away now.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be Counter-Strike without the terrorists and without the blood, you know, to Counter-Strike's credit, they have something like the ESCA League. They have tons of these feeder leagues that allow for strong growth. It just feels like, you know, they're building walls around the Overwatch League, so I'm a little apprehensive about that strategy. I feel like they're trying to monetize too quickly, and I think that they need the organic growth on the front side.
Yeah.
All right. So I think, you know, I mean, we've gone over Overwatch a lot. Mo, what's our next story?
So our next story, I think, is right up your alley because it talks about, you know, content and monetization. And it has something to do with a conspiracy theory, but it's esports video site Dingit allegedly fakes millions of views. So I was relatively unaware of Dingit before, which kind of probably further strengthens this point. So this was a story that was reported earlier, like a couple of years ago, by the people over at Slingshot, if I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's been reported again by Cybersport, which is a relatively new esports site. So esports video hosting site Dingit, they have been accused of ad fraud, alongside with a network of 86 esports highlight sites, which was reported by BuzzFeed. So Dingit.tv, which features video highlights from games and esports content, is at the center of this controversy. After suggestions came out that a large part of their traffic is derived from hidden pop-ups originating from torrenting and porn sites. So what it does is bring in large numbers of fake viewers, which can go through the general verifications test. And that creates a large part of like fake viewers, which then obviously through their advertisement creates a lot of fake or revenue that isn't justified. I think the CMO of Dingit released a statement where he said that they have 4 separate verifications tests and nothing of this is true. But as Cybersport found out, and maybe Anton, you can later go a little bit more into how they found that out, but they get a whopping 36% of their visits via referrals, which are a lot of these, sketchy sites. Twitch only gets about 11%, so that's a lot of a big difference. The vast majority of these referrals are from these 86 esports highlight sites, and those are the exact platforms that are accused of being set up just to funnel views into Dingit through these pop-up ads on porn sites, on torrenting sites, and basically redirect users kind of unseen through Dingit. So Anton, what are your thoughts?
I don't know if it's me following the wrong game, but my knee-jerk reaction is that I so rarely see any type of content from Dingit that I can't imagine that all this traffic is authentic. I know that, for the levels of content that they say that the amount of views that they're saying they have, we were spending millions of dollars a month at Azubu for. I haven't seen any large funding announcements, and I'm very skeptical about their numbers. I do have to say that I think around March of maybe earlier this year, they pivoted from live streaming to clips, and they are doing something similar to like licensing clips out to different people. I haven't seen any major partnerships coming in for Dingit from with any major teams. I think that the ones maybe that they have Pentas Esports, which is maybe like a tier 2 Counter-Strike team, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just super skeptical about it. And the article that you were referencing was a piece written in 2016 when they were hosting StarCraft tournaments. And people were very dubious of the numbers that they were posting in terms of views. And then now to have basically the exact same thing be posted a year and a half later, I mean, it just feels like it's, they're using the same strategies. So again, why is this bad for esports? Is that, if somebody out there finds an example of viewership fraud, because this is what it potentially is or allegedly is, sponsors will not want to work in the esports space. You may be scaring people off.
I think a better kind of more direct comparison can be with all this news coming out about these kind of tier 2 esports, tier 2 and tier 3 esports teams that don't pay their players, or don't pay what they're supposed to pay. We've heard stories before. I mean, denial pops up a lot of times. Those stories actually have a large effect. Because I can, I can't mention which brand, but we have been in talks with multiple brands in the past, and for WAM, and people have mentioned stuff like, we would like to sponsor your more general gaming content because esports still is a little too Wild West for us, and then they quote an article that talks about teams not paying their players. And they're like, we're just afraid that if we sponsor a show that has esports players on there, and they, and, you know, it'll come out that they're not getting paid. We don't want our brand to be connected with that. And they don't understand the space enough to understand the difference between a tier three team or a tier two team and a cloud nine. So, but these things have effect. And if you're looking for reasons not to invest in esports, which tons of brands are, they're looking for reasons not to do this, not to take this risk. Even small things like this can have a huge effect.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm browsing their website as we're talking. You know, in the last, 12 hours or so, they've had 30 clips get uploaded. And so you're telling me that these 30 clips are how you got 40 million views? I mean, that's just, that's dubious. Anyway, I don't know. They got called out for it in the past. They seem to be getting called out for it now. Just always tread carefully in the esports world. All right, so let's go into some positive news, Mo. You picked out this next story?
Yeah, so Aloysius is hired as the director of scouting for Infinite Esports and Entertainment. So Infinite Esports is the parent company of Optic Gaming, which obviously has all of Optic's teams, like their League of Legends team and their Overwatch League Houston Outlaws team. Ali is great. He is a co-founder, if I'm correct, of Misfits, which he's done a lot of stuff in League. Also, he is also a co-founder of Team Laser Kittens, which was a very competitive Overwatch team in the time where before the OWL. So I think this is a great hire by Infinite, because he is one of those few people who has a lot of experience in both League and Overwatch, which is kind of a unique situation for Optic, because they are one of, I think, two teams that are both in the OWL and in the NALCS. So I think this is a great hire. What do you think, Anton?
Yeah, I mean, I've been seeing a lot of hires come out of the Optic camp and what their larger strategy is. So it seems that Optic is part of the parent company of Infinite Esports and Entertainment, right? So Infinite Esports Entertainment is the parent company. Optic Gaming is in it. The Houston Outlaws are in it. I'm curious to know what else is in that holding company. Because it seems like they have a larger vision that goes goes beyond Optic. And, with their hires of, I believe it was with this, that's where we saw John's Fire go. They saw Razorfish. They own, I think Chris Cheney's involved. I think he might actually be the one in charge, but I'm really curious to know, what the grand vision is now that they've acquired all these different teams and all these different outfits. Are they all just support entities for Optic Gaming? Possibly. But I feel like with the way that they're operating, there might be more than just Optic and Infinity Sports.
Yeah, I think they're going for kind of the Rick Fox approach, where you use Optic as the banner brand and you use Optic to launch other businesses in the esports vertical. They're actually, they announced someone called Jonathan Uthone, I butchered his name, announced on Twitter a couple of days ago that he founded a new company called NGAGE Esports. And he'll be working under the Infinite Esports and Entertainment family. And it's a events management and broadcasting company. So that's similar to what Rick Fox and Echo Fox did with Twin Galaxies, that now runs the H1Z1 League. So this is, I think this is their bigger plan. And they had an interview in the Infinite people had an interview in a local newspaper the other day, and that's literally what they said. Optic is our big, it's our big fish, and we're going to use that to just get everything else out and build an actual profitable ecosystem surrounding it.
No, I mean, I think they're definitely making the right moves with the hires. I think that, they're filling in the right holes. But it's interesting just to see how everything's developing down there in Texas. Yeah. All right. Do you have any thoughts about it in addition before we move on?
No, I think, you know, we had a bad story, then we had a good story. So now I think we fortunately have a bad story again. Anton, can you start that off for us?
Yeah. So this hit the mainstream media pretty hard last week. An argument over a Call of Duty match led to a deadly swatting incident after a false address was posted. I don't even want to call them competitive Call of Duty players. Let's call them two Call of Duty players, because I don't want this to be associated with esports. Led to a man being killed by police in Kansas after authorities were incorrectly informed he was holding somebody hostage. So these guys are playing, I think, a $1 wager match. They got into an argument, and the one guy said, "What's your address? I'm coming over to get to, you know, like, let's settle this in real life." The kid who was challenged to give his real address gave a fake address, I believe, down the street. And then the first kid called in a SWAT threat. I think this is what's been confirmed. Other things that I've heard was that the kid who called in the SWAT threat used basically a proxy. He has a friend who's basically knows how to SWAT things. And I think he got that friend to actually call in the SWAT attack. And apparently this is the same duo or the same individuals who called in the fake bomb threats to MLG Dallas 2 weeks ago. It's a really rough incident. Basically, like, when the police showed up, they ended up shooting this totally innocent man who had no idea what was going on. So I think on top of everything else, the police response was totally out of proportion. And, you know, it was just a knee-jerk reaction. It was a very tragic thing that happened. Mo, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I agree with everything you said so far. I think the reaction of the police was unjust. Something in their quote-unquote defense, which isn't really their defense, was that I think this is unique. I don't think this Kansas, you know, local police authorities were used to swatting. I don't know. This is just a guess. But this is disgusting. And I think this is a place where the law still has to catch up. This thing happens before. Luckily, not with these type of grave consequences. But when you're swatting... you have, like, in this case, you know, apparently we know who it was. Prosecution needs to see this as attempted murder or, you know, being involved in murder and just prosecute them like they, you know, like they're, like, it's their reason why they why someone got killed, because let's be honest, that's what happened. And unfortunately this happens a lot more with Call of Duty, which I don't think it's because of Call of Duty. I think it has to do with the relatively young fan base of that game.
Don't even go there. That's not true. No, okay. I mean, I'm just going to disagree. No, I feel like it's like every game has a young demographic and a young and immature demographic. I feel really bad that Call of Duty gets stereotyped as this, because I do believe that there's other communities that SWAT. It's just that it's a kind of like...
Well, it's become a toxic cliche of Call of Duty. It's not, like I said, it has nothing to do with 99.99% of the Call of Duty community is nothing like this. Yeah, but I'm saying there's a small group of people which, like I said, these aren't like hundreds of people. This person went to one person which was known to SWAT. So like, there are only a handful of people that do this type of stuff, and they don't mind doing it multiple times. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah, and I just think that, you know, correlation does not imply causation. I think every game has a young... I don't think that Call of Duty's audience is much younger than anybody else's.
Yeah, I rescind what I said before. I think being young might be more of a requirement to be stupid enough to do this type of stuff and not realize what you're doing. But it is not a causation.
And how old was the kid who like called it in? The guy whose mugshot is posted there?
I don't know. I couldn't find that.
I think they said that he was 26.
Okay,
which I
yeah.
feel like okay is 28-year-old Andrew Finch.
That's ridiculous.
I mean, that's yeah. Oh no, Tyler Ferris, 25, is suspected of making the call. Was arrested in Los Angeles Friday. And the man who was killed was Andrew Finch. He was 28 years old. But I mean, you're a 25-year-old kid. Like, what the hell are you doing this? You should be smarter than this. I mean, awful story. You know, it's, you know, my heart goes out to the family.
And just think about, like, we talked about Dingit and the consequences that can have. Well, the Dingit story was picked up by like one website, Cybersport. It didn't get, you know, any type of media play. The only time people will find out about stuff like this is if you Google, you know, esports business, esports video, then you might find this article. Meanwhile, this story was picked up by everyone.
Yeah.
So.
No, I mean, it was a really rough story. All right. So, and then we're going to try and leave you on a note. Evo is branching out into Japan. I believe that they've done an Evo in Japan in previous years, but I'm not 100%. And they had over 5,000 players that have registered for it. And I've seen a bunch of different breakdowns of this, you know, mostly Street Fighter V. I see Tekken had 1,200 players. Smash had about 800. Blaze Blue had 633. King of Fighters, 557. ARMS. What is ARMS?
ARMS is the Switch title.
Okay. All right, 340. And then GG is...
Guilty Gear.
Guilty Gear is about 1,200. Yeah, no, I mean, good event. It's interesting that, okay, like, if you listen to... one of my favorite panels that came out of Evo this past year was the history of Evo. It was basically a bunch of, like, the OG Evo employees talking about, you know, their early strategies of, you know, producing this event. And one of the things that they experimented with in the early 2000s was running an East Coast Evo. And for various reasons, they stated that, oh, you know, we don't, it wasn't to our benefit. You know, it was hard to run multiple events. We couldn't really replicate the Evo magic in another location. And I feel like running an Evo in Japan is somewhat similar to running an Evo on the East Coast in terms of, like, you know, the expansion type strategy. And it's interesting that, you know, that they're chasing it now. So I guess maybe things have changed, but again, like, somewhat of a tangent, but again, it's like highly recommend listening to that panel. They've tried to expand before. I think Evo Japan for them is not their first time. So happy for everybody there all around.
Yeah. Just a few thoughts. I think that, as you mentioned, I think right now expansion is pretty interesting. I think we mentioned 2 weeks ago that Japan is now becoming slowly more open to esports. So, I think that, you know, this is as good as time as ever. It'll only get better. But what's really interesting when we're looking at this breakdown of numbers is Street Fighter obviously is incredibly popular. Tekken is logical. Smash, you know, they're some of the usual names, but it's also interesting to see that Guilty Gear is the second most popular title, which is very, very popular in Japan, and ARMS, which is a Switch title, still got 340 people that want to play, which really isn't a relevant title at all in the US. And it shows kind of the different direction that Japanese esports is taking. And I wonder that with the way the government looks at esports, it becomes easier for Japanese companies to build an esports ecosystem. I wonder if we'll see some of that move back into the US. So I wonder if you get a competitive kind of Guilty Gear base, if that translate into more popularity here.
I don't know. I feel that it's kind of like how I feel like every region has their popular games. You have Crossfire that's, you know, really popular in Russia. You have Dota 2 that's popular in Eastern Europe, and League of Legends more so in Western Europe and North America. I've seen games kind of like take root in certain you know, parts of the world, and I've rarely seen them, you know, expand out. I guess the outliers to that would be like League of Legends becoming really big in China, but things like Call of Duty never really translated to Europe or elsewhere. So I do think that like Guilty Gear, I'm like 90% sure is a huge title in Japan, but I don't think that it's ever gotten really, it's never gotten beyond like a tier three esport here.
Yeah, fair enough. I think it'll be interesting to see how it develops. A story we hadn't planned that I just caught up, which is not more of a story, it's more of a milestone, is that Rocket League reached 40 million players now worldwide, mm-hmm. which is a big milestone. And being at the RLCS, and we discussed this a bit before a couple of weeks ago, I think it's cool just to see how Rocket League is growing, and meanwhile is taking a very good esports approach of just, you know, smaller events, building up something gradually rather than some other titles that are exploding and then, you know, start with a big bang and then fizzle out.
Yeah, no, I think Rocket League has done really well. Just their growth strategy. I think they've produced a bunch of excellent events this year. I think that they've hired a bunch of excellent talent. And I think that the game itself is great. So really happy for everybody there. I think that they've kind of taken this platform approach that's a little different from Overwatch, and I think it's kind of been paying off. So kind of a fan of how they've been doing things. And also another story that just kind of came out. We tend to talk about people who just got new jobs in the esports space. My buddy Logan Dodson, sometimes known as Sniptality, has now just joined FaZe Clan as their vice president of post-production. And FaZe Clan, for those of you that don't know, is I think they have a bunch of different esports teams. I think right now they have the number one Counter-Strike team in the world. They have a Call of Duty team. They're massive on YouTube. Most of their members have millions of subscribers. One of my colleagues, Shibby's over there working with Richard, and they're building a full studio in LA. So shout out to Logan for his new gig.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, we've been following FaZe for a while, and it's really interesting to see they're expanding heavily. Just makes me wonder. I wonder if they have some outside investment coming in. But hopefully, if that's the case, we'll hear more about that in the future.
Yeah, and if you want to be like Logan Dodson and get a sports, I think you want to listen to Mo's next section.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good bridge. So we did this like 2 months ago, and every few months, we want to look at who is hiring in esports. We want to highlight some of the jobs that are out there that are available. So I want to highlight four jobs that are out there right now. So first of all, this is kind of more of a mid-level job. Will be Evolve Talent Agency, a amazing talent agency out of LA, is looking for talent managers. They probably represent over 50% of all Twitch partners that have representation, and they are heavily focused on gaming and esports. They are looking for talent managers with previous experience in LA-based. Both of these things are strongly preferred. And if you're interested in the job, you can email your resume to ryan@evolvedtalent.com. The second job is really more of a senior-level position. H1Z1 Pro League and Twin Galaxies are looking for a esports general manager. So Twin Galaxies, as they're stating on their website, is seeking an experienced esports general manager with a strong understanding of esports as well as traditional sports, someone who has managed complex projects with diverse stakeholders. So the esports general manager will work very closely with the director of esports leagues and help create global world-class esports ecosystems designed to ensure that teams can thrive. So it's someone who has an understanding of events and broadcast management and has, you know, a good quality standard. So this hiring is being done by our friends over at Prodigy Sports. So you can apply for the job at prodigysports.com. Then the other two jobs, which really got announced today, is Our good friend Grant over at Monumental Sports and the Wizard District Gaming is looking for an NBA 2K manager. So really someone, you know, to run the daily NBA 2K league. So someone who has previous experience managing teams, and, you know, you'll manage a team house, facilitate the players, you know, you'll manage and coach these 2K teams and work with Grant and his team on the operation. It's great for someone who has some experience previously working with teams in esports, and it's a great experience. Nothing but good things about Monumental Sports. So if you're interested, definitely go to Grant's Twitter page or go to Teamwork Online and just look for this position. And finally, I know that that Splice is looking for some marketing people. I think it's a director of marketing. So they're looking for a person who has a lot of marketing experience. So if any of our listeners have senior level marketing experience and are looking to get into esports, I think this is a wonderful experience. If you're a new entrant into the world of esports, I wouldn't apply for this, or probably is a bit useless. This is really a senior level position. But if you're interested, you can go to Splice's website, go to jobs, and you can apply there. Anton, do you have anything else before we wrap up?
Yeah, last one that, like, you know, I read Twitter a lot. One of my favorite threads from this past week were Ed Chang's predictions for 2018. He does strategy at EA's competitive gaming division, so what he says should be taken with a grain of salt. But I liked everybody's input on basically on this thread. And so his predictions were for 2018, multiple venture-backed orgs will sell or close shop. I agree. There's too many right now. Emergence of premium paid content. I don't agree with this if it's pay-per-view. There might be some new ways to monetize it, but I don't think pay-per-view will ever work for esports. His third one was that stick and ball esports will continue to grow. I'm curious to see if, you know, they will definitely continue to grow as the publishers and the leagues continue to pour money into them. What I'm curious is whether or not they'll achieve flywheel status, where they'll become self-sustaining and, you know, grow organically as opposed to dollar in, dollar out. Arena of Valor will become a tier one at some expense to League of Legends. I don't think Arena of Valor will become a tier one esport. Mm-hmm. I'm just, you know, I think it's going to be huge in China. I don't necessarily think that it will find that type of traction in the US. By the way, both Mo and I have spent some time with the game this week. Our thumbs are in quite a bit of pain. And there will be one clear battle royale as a sport winner. And I'm going to disagree with that one as well, because I think it's going to be more closely to something like League of Legends and Dota 2. Both of those are tier one esports, and I think that there's enough room for two battle royale games to operate. And there's a lot of, like, really good feedback from people from Twitch, from people from Blake from Cavaliers, and a few others. But Mo, what do you think?
So I think I agree with his first statement about the venture capital orgs, that some will sell or close shop. That's really the way venture capital starts businesses. It's bets, and when they see it doesn't work off, they're easy to sell or close. The emergence of premium paid content, I actually think you'll see some of that. I don't think necessarily paid content, but I think more premium content. People will try, at least. You'll see stick and ball esports will continue to grow. I think that's true just for the fact that the NBA 2K League will start, which will have a positive effect. I think FIFA will do some more stuff. And as we mentioned in our own predictions, you know, whether it's the NFL or whether it's MLS, I think I think they will announce their own stuff. So that will cause stick and ball esports to grow by definition. Arena of Valor is a tier one.
I'm just curious. Do you think that their tier one, that stick and ball esports will achieve flywheel status? You know, whether it's like the Uber effect, where it's like more drivers create better services, which creates better riders, and the whole thing organically grows, Or is it like, you know, you're only going to get as much money as you put in, like as much as you're only going to get out as much as you put in, I think for the
next few years, I think most of these leagues are seen as loss leaders. So we're losing money on it, but it gains, you know, a 365 kind of content that prolongs our sports calendar for our league. That's the way these people think about it. I think eventually we might, if we focus on might, get to a point where they're self-sustainable. But that's definitely my thought on that. What do you think?
I mean, I just feel like, I don't know. I had a really interesting discussion with somebody where it's based like esports are great because they allow you to compete in things that you wouldn't be able to do in real life. And, you know, they move away from realism, right? And stick and ball esports, you know, you're trying to really closely replicate something that's a traditional sport. So you're trying to like mirror something that, you know, has limitations already. So stick and ball sports would be really cool if, for example, you had like supers or, you know, you could do ridiculous shit in them basically, right? But I don't think that they're going to be competitive with, the ceiling for the popularity of stick and ball esports is lower than a game that allows, that has full freedom to just be a good game rather than try and replicate the limitations of a traditional sport. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I agree. To say even more, I think the theory behind it is different. Like I said before, I think the focus for stick and ball esports is obviously, hopefully, to at some point at least have a sustainable ecosystem. But for now, it's so that the fan, the NBA, MLS, NFL fan, has, you know, when the season ends, or, you know, they have more content. So this fan who already likes the NFL can now go and watch the NFL league if that comes out, or the NBA fan can watch the NBA 2K league. So I think that's more of the focus with this than like it ever rivaling league or it ever rivaling Counter-Strike.
Fair enough. All right. And then the last two was Arena of Valor becoming and one Battle Royale winner. What are your thoughts on this?
So Arena of Valor, I said it in my own prediction, you know, I think it will probably be a tier one. I don't think an expensive league. I think both can be there at the same time. I don't think it's one or the other. And then finally, there'll be one clear Battle Royale as an esports winner. Depends what you consider to be one clear winner. I'm putting my bets on Fortnite. I mean, it's I'm not too engulfed into Battle Royale that you should take it as too much of a statement, but I think Fortnite can be extremely popular and can be a winner, but PUBG can be a winner as well. PUBG can be extremely popular as well next year. So I think we might get a quote unquote winner of like one just being, you know, a step above the rest. But I don't think we'll get to a point where you have like where you have like a Fortnite, which is really popular, and then PUBG becoming a tier three title. I don't think it'll get to that point.
I think that about wraps up all the topics that I wanted to touch upon. Do you have any that you wanted to cover?
No. So Anton, where can people follow you?
As always, you can find me on Twitter at JokerCan'tSpell. And Mo, where can people follow?
You can find me on Twitter at MREISENMANN. I appreciate the follow, and thank you guys for listening, and we'll be here next week.